Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HTI-1 Proposed Role Task Force. Just a reminder that today's meeting is of the full task force, but the focus will be primarily on Group 2 recommendations. When developing your final recommendations, I encourage you to put implementation concerns aside for now so that we continue to move the interoperability of health data forward. We only have a limited time to spend on each topic area so that we complete Group 2 recommendations today. All of our task force meetings are open to the public and your feedback is always welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled toward the end of our meeting. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members. So when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Steve and Lane.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning. Welcome all.
Madel Briggs Melanson. Hans Butendick. Hannah Galvin.
Good morning.
Audie Gwynn-Lockley. Tim Jurgis. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
Anna McAllister.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Devin McGraw. Aaron Meary. Elia Oliveira.
Good morning.
Ikelama Ocean Kenton. Naresh Thunderajan.
Good morning.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning. Good to be with you all.
And Cheryl Turney is on vacation, so won't be able to join us today. Now, please join me in welcoming Stephen Lane and Steve Eichner for their opening remarks.
Good morning, all. This is Steve Eichner. Welcome to this full task force meeting where we are going to be working hard to finalize our recommendations for the draft report that we will provide, or the report we will be providing to HITECH for their review, modification, and subsequent submission to the Office of National Coordinator. We've got an awful lot of work to do today, so we are not going to spend a lot of time reviewing our charges. Just for the record's sake, our purposes are to review the HTI-1 rule and make recommendations to ONC regarding a wide range of topics. We will have a public comment period towards the end of our meeting today. We encourage and welcome comments from the public. It's really important to have public input as we form our recommendations. We do ask today that task force members do not work in the worksheet during the meeting. Stephen Lane will be scribing for us and getting information into the worksheets, but please don't simultaneously edit them. So we want to make sure we're getting all the changes in and not overriding each other's work. Stephen, you have anything to add?
No, thank you again for everyone's time and attention, and we're looking forward to pushing through a long list of recommendations.
So I think we will go ahead and jump back in. We're going to start today at row number
four. And Steve, if you want me to be in there, you need to get out of that cell in column J.
Practice what I recommend, right?
Right.
I am out.
Perfect.
So we're going to start today on row four, which is recommendations focused on things around the naming of editions. The first recommendation that we have drafted to put forward is looking at recommending that ONC release or maintain and release a table or tables of what are the specific criterion and what are the standards used for maintain or reporting data or changing data in that current criterion, both the immediate past, current, and looking to the future as a reference guide to support both providers using certified technology and other entities that are involved with exchanging data with certified technology. So there is a clear understanding and reference to what is actually being used and what is currently in regulation to help resolve issues if there are challenges in exchanging data. Are there any concerns or suggested modifications at this point?
Are we looking at column G or J?
J.
Sorry. Sorry. Yep. I want to see we need to shift to J. Sorry.
Okay.
We have people a moment to read. Can we lock this down? Hearing no comments, I think we can lock it, move on. Look at second recommendation, looking at recommending that ONC include relevant information regarding compliance with messaging standards in deployed standards and deployed systems as metrics, with the goal of including in the metrics section of the proposed rule, looking at tracking compliance or usage of existing or current certification standards. Again, looking at a method of measuring the use of standards that are actually in regulation and serving as a measure for usage of SVAP developed standards or SVAP adopted standards. Is this a good thing? Do we want to leave this in?
One quick back to the first one is that it has an extra word that after information. Tables information that for each relevant criterion. I think if the word that is dropped in the sentence works. Otherwise, something is missing.
Okay, yeah, let's...
Sorry, which sentence are you in, Hans?
The very first line, there's a that that probably...
There seems to be an extra word, tables of information that for each relevant criterion certified technology stops. I think if you drop that, it's fine.
Got it, yeah. Got it.
Thank you for that, Hans. And again, the second recommendation is looking at adding a measure or measures related to usage or inclusion of the standards that are in or actually working in the field. So reconciling what is actually in the certified standard versus what's actually deployed. Any feedback there? Looking at the third recommendation is advising ONC to consider...
You're back in the cell.
I'm sorry.
It's easy to do.
Thank you for that. Looking at the third recommendation is advising ONC that it may want to consider the impacts of using a editionless evolution regarding the impact of more flexible modification and the interrelationships between adopting standards such as the DSI, the USCDI, and the impacts of the flexibility and the opportunities for things to be out of alignment, and as well as being in a state of constant flux rather than looking at stable systems. Any recommended changes?
I'm curious, does this mean that we're asking ONC to look at potentially batching criteria updates versus constantly having various criteria in flux? What are we driving at with this?
The current recommendation does not specify that as a strategy, but it certainly calling attention to the concept of if you look at not having a edition approach where you're operating all standards in one fell swoop, you are in a state of flux and you have to worry about the interaction between the different standards and compliance. In terms of looking at the effects of one exchange factor and another, and if you don't raise all boats simultaneously, you run the risk of having disconnections or a lack of ability to exchange properly.
I see. Okay, that makes sense.
Eliel has his hand up.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me, Stephen?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not about the specific recommendation, but the way we are doing this online, I'm having a hard time keep track of the text to read because it moves, and sometimes we're talking about a specific one. So would it be okay to just put a number in front of each one of these so that when we say we're talking about number three, it doesn't get lost as we move across the screen? I'm just really having a hard time finding what we are working on at times.
Sorry about that, Eliel. I will do that for you, for all of us.
Thanks so much.
Or maybe an asterisk in front of the one. Oh, that was fast.
Yeah, I would second that, actually. It's pretty hard to follow.
So what we're asking is they consider the impact. Do we need to change it to a more specific recommendation about batching?
This Hans, I have two notes. One in reaction to that, when we say batching, we're effectively going back to additions because additions are effectively batches of grouped things together. The cadence might be different, but something has happened there that you're grouping them together. But highlighting that that they need to look at that because it has pros and cons, either one can work as long as you understand the total impact at any point in time. And I put in the suggestion in a note to add to the first sentence something along the lines that it needs to not only look at the total impact of what is in the certification program, but keeping in mind that there is a lot of other HIT work going on that progresses as well, and that is also going through upgrade cycles and training and everything else. So we really need to look at it holistically and say, what's the total impact on what, as a result, the providers and others, what it takes to get this all done. It's not only what's in the certification program, everything else that needs to happen as well.
So basically adding a line that would say something along the lines of changes in certification criterion impact not solely certified technology, but impact other systems and other exchanges.
It's not as much that certification criteria impact other components. It is that it contributes in addition to other HIT updates to workload as well. So I put it in the chat, including all, at the end of the sentence, something like, including all other HIT updates that need to be managed as well. And they have the same needs of training, efforts, et cetera. And that's going to be, there's only so much in the bucket of a provider that they have available to spend on any updates. And they need to balance between the two of them. What's certified and what's not certified, but I still need it.
I wonder too, do we feel there's an effective feedback mechanism from HIT developers to ONC where if something is introduced that developers feel is too high of a burden or too short of a timeline? Do we have a method to for those developers to reach out to ONC and batch? Or do we need a method?
I'm a little concerned that this feedback are going deeper than we have time for.
Yeah.
I think we need to nail these down and know that there are really smart people who are going to be reading them. We've got a long way to go today. Hans, I believe I added your suggested text at the beginning of three, where I think that's where you wanted it.
Yep, that helps. And generally, I think there are opportunities to provide that feedback as part of these kind of responses. For example, EHRA is putting together what they've done before, a grid of adding up, looking at all the criteria and giving them a perspective of, is this a small effort? Is it a large effort in total? What's happening? So there are opportunities for vendors and providers alike to provide that level of detail. It's not a formal special channel, but rule responses are being used to indicate how big of an effort it is. That will be too detailed for high tech to do.
Okay.
We need to move on. So looking at recommendation 4 really acknowledges the concept that the data exchange occurs not only among certified HIT, but with other users, and they may not be able to upgrade on the schedule specified by certified technology. So there does need to be alignment with technology upgrades outside of the certification program.
I mean, I think that this is general feedback, right? Oh, Clem, you had your hand up.
Second. What the implication is the fact that it does exchange occurs to things that aren't certified HIT. I mean, are we saying that we shouldn't proceed, or are we saying that they got to hurry up? I'm not sure what that means, number 4.
I think the issue is that when you're selecting a new criterion, you can't do it in a vacuum, looking exclusively at exchange between certified technology, that you have to do a landscape scan to ensure that other non-certified technology is capable of adopting the same standard in the same time frame. Otherwise, your benefit of certificate, or otherwise the impact of certified technology works well for exchange with other certified systems as an independent island, but not with other systems like public health reporting as an example. It doesn't do providers much good to have an updated system required for use of certified technology if the public health system that you're sending it to is still using an old standard.
But I still don't know what the what's the solution? Is there one? I mean, public health in some states is fairly underfunded for informatics, right, information systems.
Right. So I think that feeds into looking at the determination of what standards should be included and what the upgrade path looks like.
Okay.
And I think it's a general comment, general suggestion. Again, I don't think it's going to fall on deaf ears, but I don't think we should dwell on it. And I don't mean to be rude to anybody. I think these are all important points. We just don't have time.
Yep. Looking at number 5, recommending that ONC align or review with CMS alignment between federal programs such as certification program and promoting interoperability, so that the standards required in things like promoting interoperability are consistent with the standards required in certification criterion.
And again, I think really it's a general comment. It's not a very specific recommendation.
Well, I do want to make sure we don't understate this one. This is mine, where I think this is eloquently put, but maybe we should consider adding the rationale in here, where what's happening today is CMS incentive programs are based on CERT, Certified Electronic Health Record technology, but we have a modular certification program within ONC. And what's happening is that because the CMS definitions are based on CERT, we're effectively excluding modularly certified HIT from those programs. So it's a very big impact on the specialty EHR sector.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to capture what you're saying here, and I'm not quite getting it.
If you copy what Phil had on the right hand side, okay. That seems to be a good starting point to clarify the rationale in column K.
Yes, I got it. The rationale is there. Got it.
Thank you.
Let's see how that flows for us.
Well, one of the challenges with the language is that it's still state and local and territorial local health does not by policy or practice usually require certified technology. It's recognizing the use of CERT for providers that are participating in federal programs. Which I know was an element in Phil's text.
Right, I'm not sure I caught the point you were driving at though there, Ike.
Sure, your suggested text included that there were elements of STILT law or STILT regulations requiring the use of CERT. And that's generally not true.
Yeah, I know we ran into this as a vendor in New Jersey is one example that comes to mind where New Jersey required certified HIT. And I think that raises the question of, does that mean certified base EHR? Does it mean modularly certified? Does it mean CERT?
to refine the piece, the focus from a public health perspective is effectively modular certification. In other words, looking at exchange of data for immunization data, the focus on public health is not that the entire system meets every single CERT element. It's the interoperability factor that becomes important from a public health end.
Right.
And compliance with the 1.5 standard.
I don't think there's any harm in including this, but I do worry that we're going too deep.
We need to move on.
So are you going to, can you live with this, Phil, the way we've captured it here?
This looks great. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
So keep on trucking. I think we're moving to the next.
Moving to row 7. Which I will point out has 12 recommendations.
So we need to go very quickly. And this is a section looking at patient consent. First recommendation looking at a requirement that certified health IT incorporate patient-facing services, enabling the patient to identify their preferences regarding disclosure of information. Any concerns?
This haunts. If we are indicating that that is for this round of certification as part of a final rule, my concern would be if with the timeline available to have such patient-facing services by relevant certified HIT, given the pre-work that needs to be done to define a good focus, consistency that can be used across providers. So that would be my concern, not with the intent, but the timeline to achieve that in this round.
I think it's a really good point, Hans, and let me just suggest that perhaps we move this to tab one, as we were discussing yesterday. Tab two is really specific feedback for this round of rulemaking on the patient requested restrictions under HIPAA. Tab two is for additional areas of future focus for restrictions. So, Hannah, your hand's up.
Yeah, I agree with that. And any patient-friendly pharmacology would need to be mapped to a semantic conceptual model, which also needs time to be developed, right? And so, So I agree with Hans that this is not ready for game day.
Yeah, I don't think there's any expectation that it would be included, or reasonable expectation that it would be included from a functional perspective in the current iteration.
Okay, I'm moving it to tab one, where I think it will be happy.
Looking at second recommendation, ONC work with relevant stakeholders, including providers, HIT developers, patients to define standard policies. And again, that may be more future looking than current rule. Hannah?
Yeah, this is Hannah again. I think that I was looking at three. But I think, yeah, this is I'll come back to three. I was looking at three.
So do we move current listed recommendation to the general tab, or do we leave it as feedback in the current implementation or current rule?
Actually, my comment applies to two as well. I think that that standard policies and rules are also, I think there needs to be a maturity model for both two and three. And I think there's probably 3 to 5 years of development on this with the appropriate funding. And so I don't think that certification is ready. I don't think we're ready for certification on this, but I think that what we are ready for is bringing the industry together to work toward this, but I think we need a 3 to 5 year maturity model.
I guess I'm trying to understand what these first two, the one that we just spoke about and this one, are trying to accomplish. Is it basically like just taking it out of like the structured codes or terminology within the structured codes and converting it into something that a patient might recognize that would be relevant to them? Is that what we're talking about?
Number two is looking at enabling the patient to make requests using patient-friendly terminology and convert it into functional capability.
Right. Yeah, so it's like converting it from the, I don't know, ICD-10 codes or CPT codes into something that my mother might recognize.
Right, so the patient can pick a disease name and not have to know the ICD-10 or the SNOMED code.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Hans?
Yeah, and building on that, it's that level of clarity that needs to be defined to enable a patient to define their preferences and consent rules. That at this point in time, by moving one and two and possibly three into that needs to be worked on. I'm jumping to 10 for a moment as an example, but then in certification in this round to say we need everybody to support data segmentation according to these guides. What one, two, and three are really looking at, what's this, real core set within those guides that we need to be able to recognize that consent rules can be built around. And if everybody's going to go off on their own interpretation of these guides by just referencing the guides for certification, I think we're going to be landing in the wrong spot by being totally inconsistent across all the implementations. So I think they tie together in that until we have asking for general adoption of these more general standards is going to lead to a very diverse implementations that may not be able to fit together. That's, I think, the primary concern with this topic. We're kind of running a little bit too fast in one area. We need to get there, but we're running a little bit too fast to get it into certification when some of the prerequisites are not in place yet to really make it work in a scalable, consistent fashion across the board.
So do we push 10 down the line, or do we pull 2 and 3 forward?
I'd be more inclined to push 10 down the line based on the fact that we believe that 1, 2, and 3, if you will, those other things, that needs to be the focus and get us through that as fast as we can. Then we know exactly what we can ask everybody to do consistently.
Eliel, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So I think along the lines of what Hans is saying is that these are good recommendations, but I think we are, you know, recommending on things that makes this harder to solve. And what I mean by that, you know, like consent for sharing a specific data element and the granular level, that's not going to be an easy task. When we don't have a solution yet, even for general consent that is, you know, understood, you know, in a, electronically that I know of, right? We have been piloting a few things in California and it's very broad, right? The consent for mental health that basically covers any sharing of mental health. It's not a specific element to a specific organization. So I think that maybe part of these recommendations here is, and I mentioned this to the annual reporting group yesterday as well, is that maybe we want to think about that there is a need to almost like a strategic planning on terms of like how this consent setup is going to work first to solve some basic consents that, you know, even the HIPAA authorization that we collect today, it's, as far as I know, it can't be queried electronically. It's kind of like, let's address one problem first, get an infrastructure in place that works for just the generic high level consent that then can be replicated and go down to the level of code, to level of other deeper levels of sharing and consent. I hope that's making sense. I just think that we are providing recommendations here that are very broad, that are going to be very hard to implement, as opposed to just trying something that works for the things that we have today.
A number of these recommendations are specifically about limiting the scope so as to make it more implementable. Clem, your hand is up. Clem, you're muted.
Clem, you're muted.
I meant to lower my hand.
Okay, now you're not muted and your hand is down. Perfect. Okay, so Ike, let's circle back to 2 and 3. How do we want to dispose of these?
I think the current position, I mean, without 2 and 3 in play in the short term, 10 doesn't really work. Because as pointed out earlier, they're tied at the hip. Hannah?
Yeah, so I would say 2 and 3 are current recommendations to work with stakeholders and collaborate with stakeholders, right? To look for an infrastructure and right, I think we talk about this as we do I think later on as a maturity model, right? This is not asking for certification now, but it is starting this process to work with stakeholders,
right.
Put this together. And I think that's okay to have here as opposed to move to the RFI piece, because these are current recommendations for what to do now to right, move.
Right, but they're not recommendations regarding the specific rule. And that was what we were tagging out, is that recommendations about action on the rule versus a more general
recommendation. And that's fair. It is so, putting the criterion into place in that, yeah.
Right. So the issue here is that these are more general recommendations, but if you get to 10, which is a specific rule-related recommendation, you run into the issue that you don't have a consistent method of terminology supported by the standard.
It's not there yet.
So yeah. How do we resolve those two pieces? Do you take 10 and do we add a line that says this needs to be done in the context of a minimum set of terminology as part of that recommendation, recognizing that you need to develop more later?
And I don't think it's just the terminology, right? I think there's pieces right. of implementation guidance. There are a bunch of dependencies here.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. And that's why 2 and 3 came out as recommendations. But you need alignment between 2. If you leave just 10, if you don't have some guidance about how to do it, you have everybody going their own direction. Hans?
It might be that if we have the overall recommendation to say why, along the lines of, while we absolutely recognize that we need to make progress here, advancing these standards in 10 in certification in the way proposed now is premature, and these are the 2, 3, 4 things that you need to do and focus on to make it possible to move forward. And we really urge you to work on that closely with everybody to accelerate that as fast as possible. But until that time, we do not recommend to move forward with the proposal that you have to include these standards as widely into certification. That seems to be the balance between the two.
I agree, Hans. Some language like that, I might start with 10, right, that we're endorsing the standards-based approach, right, but with these dependencies.
So I'm going to bring 10 up so that we're not running up and down as we're trying to make sense of this, okay?
Yep, and you'll keep the numbers the same?
I'll keep the numbers the same so that we're doing the best we can here. Okay. All right. And I changed it slightly to say, recommend that ONC point to the following standards for use regarding disclosure of patient data, simply because I think that, you know, and then we're going to go on to further clarify what we think ought to be done now, correct?
It's a little bit of these are good ones to point to, but without the more specific guidance, we are concerned that it's premature to advance.
Right. No, but I'm just saying, but we were specifically asked to identify the relevant standards.
Yeah.
So we want to give them what they asked for, you know, and then we can go on to say, so that's what I changed it to point to.
Right. To successfully utilize the standards we've identified, you need to do recommendation 2, recommendation 3.
So I read this as ONC asking whether about a standards agnostic approach versus endorsement of standards, and if so, which standards, right? And so at a high level, it sounds like this group, which I haven't been a part of this subgroup as much, but I would endorse a standards-based approach over the standards agnostic approach. And so just honing in on that at the high level, but in order to move forward with a standards-based approach, there are then these dependencies.
Are there dependencies?
Yeah, exactly.
I agree, Hannah. I like that. So should we slip that in the front of 2, pursue a standards-based approach?
Well, I think that's 10. I think 10 is that we recommend using a standards-based approach for disclosure of patient data using these standards. to successfully utilize these standards, you need to do, we need to do 2 and 3.
I like that.
Okay.
Or you need to do A and B. It doesn't have to be 2 and 3. You can get collapsed, but.
Right.
So you set the goal and the steps you need to do to get to the goal. There you go.
Okay. Go on. I think I've got this.
Wait for an update on the shared screen.
Here it comes. Okay. Sorry. I'm doing my best here.
No worries. It's a challenging task. I'm grateful to you for your help.
Why don't you go ahead and start in on the next one?
So looking at what's currently listed as recommendation 4, ONC requires certified health IT to provide patients reports regarding past disclosure of their information to include payment treatment operations and de-identified releases of data in standard for file formats so that patients can download it and use it in other tools. Is this?
This, I'm happy to speak about this if interested.
Please.
I mean, this is an improved version of what I suggested. I love the machine readable, and yeah, that's perfect. This to me, I think, is important. If we're giving people the ability to restrict data, we need to actually tell them how their data is being used. And my rationale on this is, well, it's actually several fold. One is I got into health data stuff because I was frustrated with RCTs. And I think that real world data is essential. But for people to support the use of either identified or de-identified real world data, whether that includes for clinical care and interoperability or the use of it for secondary data research, they need to trust and understand how that data is being used. I think it's essential both for clinical care and patient care and sharing data from one doctor to the other, as well as for the use of real-world evidence and the development of real-world evidence for whether it's drug discovery or cohort definition or regulatory purposes and phase 4 studies with FDA. So this to me has been one significant frustration over time. I can share my video if it helps. It's been a significant area of frustration for me over time that we give healthcare institutions, developers, data brokers, lots of latitude over what they can do with data. And we don't let patients know what is happening. In a time of incredible lack of social trust, this is going to really bite us over time. And I think seeing the beginning of it, and we need to start taking
it. And there was prior investigation in the space 10 or 12 years ago, as you kindly shared, but the technology at that point was not as advanced as exactly. We are today. There was not as much exchange going on, so there were some challenges in operationalizing it. Now, with a focus on information exchange and disclosing information electronically, it seems logical to be able to include a record of where that data is being passed with patient identifier information anyway, and make that information easily available for patients to consume.
I have a question that I'm trying to figure out is that in light of the fact that there are already accounting of disclosure requirements in place, what is it in this recommendation that we can highlight that is insufficient for what you're trying to achieve? At this point in time, as I'm reading it, unless I'm aware of some other things, but where the boundary is in place, it's not very clear what already is required in terms of disclosures and what actually should be added to that.
Because right now, Hans, it's impossible or incredibly difficult for a patient to actually get the accounting. I can't go to my patient portal and pull down a link that says, hey, here's everywhere my provider disclosed my data.
So I would argue that this recommendation is very important and does not specifically address the questions that we were asked related to the this part of the NPRM around HIPAA patient restrictions, and that we should take it and move it back to tab one for future consideration.
Well, the argument that I'm making, I would leave it where it is because it's, I believe it's to be directly related, because if I'm putting in restrictions about my data, I deserve an accounting to be able to ensure that those restrictions were followed. And this information provides that accounting. Otherwise, I've made a recommendation or request, but I've got no way of seeing whether it was actually honored.
Exactly. And you can see my furtherance of the rationale. I mean, if I am, and I have not been diagnosed with HIV, or I have a genetic test that shows that I'm going to get ALS or something like that, there may be specific clinicians that I don't want to be able to access that. But that information is important if I'm in an emergency situation, or it should be exchanged. But if I'm afraid that everybody is going to know that I have HIV or I'm going to get ALS at some point, I'm going to want to restrict it from everybody. So if I can get a sense of how the data is being used, when it's being accessed and by whom, there will be a much greater level of comfort in letting the data be shared amongst different clinical settings. Or even for de-identified data use, if I understand that it's going to be used for research to, you know, cure ALS.
We can clarify the recommendation about that direct linkage to what we requested to comment on, if that helps. To me, it was kind of obvious, but if we need to spell it out in plain text, I'm sure we can.
I think there's a direct connection. I think it's a critical element. I mean, if we're thinking about restrictions, we need to give people a context to understand both the impact of the restrictions as well as why that might not be the best choice, and give them a sense of comfort of what's happening with the data.
Clem, you've got your hand up.
I think we got to worry a little bit about what it means to have data restricted. Does that mean, does anyone know? I mean, so when someone reads a record and is going to have someone do something that would be contraindicated given a given problem, will there be any signal that the data, some data was restricted to the clinicians so they wouldn't make fatal mistakes?
The recommendation is a good question, but the recommendation at hand is about a is about accounting, not about enforcement of.
Okay, all right.
Hannah?
Just to speak to Clem's question, there's work going on to look at consensus-driven guidance around implementation of how granular segmentation would be implemented and operationalized in that way. And I think that would be part of a maturity model around granular segmentation. How would we balance privacy, a patient's very legitimate privacy request, with informed consent, with patient safety considerations? And there is a task force that has undertaken that work through a modified Delphi process.
That's wonderful to hear, but I want to keep us focused on our activity. We've got a big mountain still to climb.
So is four ready to wrap?
I think it is. Any dissension?
Okay. Shall we continue to five or go back and revisit 10?
I think we go five.
Okay.
Looking at adopting maturity model for data segmentation and granular consent. And again, this is kind of tied in to that 10 issue as well.
And I apologize, Eliel. I'm moving things around so that they can be viewed more readily. I hope that's okay. That we've got some screen limitations here.
So do we include 5 in that 10 package?
I think that's a natural spot for it.
Clem?
5 and 10 package, I don't understand.
Oh, looking at the relationship on the, where do we go with adoption of the standards for privacy and data segmentation, this is tied in.
I'm bunching 2 together for a moment, but 5 and 6 are good candidates to be C and D under 10.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you for being clear about it that I was on, but that was where I was headed.
Could I comment on recommendation 5?
Go ahead,
Clem. Well, I mean, the challenge really is free text. And an awful lot of clinical data is free text. And there's not any current simple way to kind of isolate stuff that might be kept more private than not in free text. And I think we don't face that. We could put sand in the oils. I mean, sand in the gears.
But is it necessary here to comment on that? I mean, they're really asking us for 4 standards.
Yeah, and, okay. And that's kind of inherent in the development of a maturity model. So
C and D, are we comfortable with these?
C and D.
What's net 5, which will become C, and 6, which will become D under what is now 10?
Oh my God, I'm confused.
Are you comfortable with 5 and 6?
I'm not quite comfortable because no one's implemented it. And it's obviously got some challenges.
But the recommendation we're making is that in order to successfully implement the exchange of privacy standards, here are supporting activities. And supporting activities include developing a model that accounts for the data and limiting the scope, or at least the initial scope, to a following subset. And I guess that would be a modification for 6, Stephen, is to limit the initial scope.
And maybe completely agree with the Clem that 5 and 6 former discussions, if they were to stand alone, that still requires work to make it happen. But if they become C and D under 10, which says is that we want to get standards based, but we have some work to do. Those are 2 of the areas where we have work to do before it really can be operationalized.
Right, exactly.
We're in sync with Clem in that regard as well. But we want to make focus is put on that space.
Yeah, just picking up on Clem's comment, the thing that I have is like nobody has tried, even with the basic concepts that we have today, just generic high level, HIPAA authorization, some consent to be part of a research project, which is basically giving someone the authority to do something with your information. And now we're talking about really granular level standards definition when we even haven't tested and used a generic one. I continue to fear that this is not going to necessarily lead to a lot of solutions until we actually have a pilot system that can do the distributed access of what someone's opinions are. Anyways, that's still my feeling. I don't see anything in this document that's basically saying, here's a recommendation to HDI-1 is that before we get into all this standardization of granular data sharing permissions from patients, let's at least try some distributed way to know someone's wishes, even if the consent is a broad consent. Then you can get into the specifics.
Would you be comfortable if we added an extra bullet or an extra item that said a pilot approach needs to be included, or a test, or there needs to be iterative work done for the successful testing and deployment of an approach?
Yeah, I think a recommendation to strategic discussion on how these ecosystems can be tested and pilot would be a good place to start. Okay. And then all these numbers that we've been talking to basically follow under that. Sorry.
Hans, I saw your hand go up. Hans?
My double mute. The common B under 10, I think that might be a good spot maybe to further enhance, if needed, the statements around advanced elite projects, hub and spoke. I think that probably speaks to some of that. How do you now also operationalize that in an infrastructure, not only the vocabulary, the terminology, what is easy to use, but that the patient's consent statements can be accessible and consistently accessible across the different data holders that need to act on it or not act on it. So that it may be Eliel's clarification on B at the end might further highlight that it needs to be based on some practical piloting experience before we really can say, yes, it works, and now scale it up.
Right, because there's another recommendation that will probably come in to that pile about looking at the central store for patients to maintain their privacy standards. So that's another element that's a little bit further down. That's coming up next, actually. That's going to be another element to be incorporated. But I do think it'd be to test and establish. Yeah. Or an iterative or an iterative approach to developing an infrastructure might be a little bit better. So rather than just saying a pilot, if you do an iterative approach, that implies a private pilot and then subsequent improvements.
I have some comments, but I know Anna has her hand up, so I'll wait.
Yeah, thank you. One of my thoughts on this is that we suggest that they develop, that they work with stakeholders and develop a mechanism for granular, or a mechanism and a preferred structure for granular consent. And part of my thinking is this, that in my consulting work, I helped a client develop a system for granular consent. And rather than it being focused on specific types of data, we structured it, and this was based off of, you know, focus groups and like meeting with patients and the design process. We focused it more on how granular consent for specific data uses. So clinical consent, you know, in this case, would be like clinical consent, sharing for research, use for real world evidence, whatever the case may be. And I'm not suggesting that we develop like that list right now during this phone call or during this meeting, but I do think it's something that's worth considering because, you know, again, for clinical care, somebody might be very happy to have their data, their very sensitive data about, you know, a genetic test for ALS or HIV or whatever, shared with one physician to another, but they might be concerned about that being incorporated into an insurance company's database somehow, either directly or indirectly, and you can easily use tokenization to find out and re-identify patients. So that might be a different approach that would enable better use for clinical care, but give patients the ability to determine how they want that data to be used and or restricted.
Anna, with all due respect to these amazing ideas, if we don't get through these recommendations, we will have none. Okay, we have 20 minutes till public comment, and we have not touched 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12.
Okay.
So literally, we will shoot ourselves in the foot if we cannot move on. Not literally, sorry.
But I think 5 and 6 moved into C and D if that worked. So
Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. I moved up 5 and 6. So 7, if we want to make progress. So I'm going to 5 and 6. 5 and 6 will be no more because they've been moved.
Yeah, I think we might be able to make something about that in a general recommendation. Eliel, do you have anything to add quickly?
Yeah, very quickly. I was just responding to what Han said earlier about this line here about advancing LEAP project, hub and spoke, which is good. I don't even believe necessarily that's in the real solution. So I have concerns of just stating that this is the pathway forward, as opposed to like we need to understand and come up with a strategy for that patient-centered consent to start.
Okay, that's a recommendation that comes up shortly. So I'm going to hold your comment just for a second. Let's go to the next recommendation. So I think we need to scroll down.
Wait, so can I move 10 below the line?
Yes, I think. Any objections?
We will refine it in the Word document. Okay. Go to
Seth. Can we navigate down a little bit? Okay. Looking at recommendation 7, adding a requirement that when an individual's HIPAA right to request a restriction on certain uses and disclosures as their PHI, that in inclusion under portal or API, that it be included or recorded in the HIT module and that relevant metadata about that restriction is passed on in association with the data. Any objections, comments?
Very similar to what we were discussing yesterday, the idea that restrictions could move, but here it's limited to the patient requested restriction under HIPAA. Yes? No hands?
No hands, except to move on. Looking at 8, add a requirement that HIT certification includes providing educational materials to patients regarding patients' option regarding disclosure. And instructions how to change their disclosure limitations. Friendly modification, it should be for patient-facing HIT.
This is under 8?
Yeah. There's no need to provide educational information to patients if patients aren't using the HIT system. Right?
Sure.
Any comments? None, moving on. Looking at recommendation 9.
Internal operational issues.
Sorry, Clem? Clem, were you trying to say something? Clem, you're muted.
There's a lot of little connections in healthcare that require communication and some standard. This is such a broad recommendation. I just worry that we ought to look at more carefully. Does that mean that a laboratory instrument that's sending data to the laboratory system can't do it? Or, we have to be careful about not breaking the system of healthcare while we think these through.
He's only talking here about patient-facing HIT modules.
Patient education information. Or are you looking at recommendation 9, Clem?
But these are only patients. Doesn't say that, patient-facing.
It says it now.
Oh, okay.
That was my friendly amendment, recognizing that there was no need to include patient educational information in a system that patients don't see. Purely back-end system from a provider standpoint, no need to include functionality that nobody's going to use, ever.
Are you comfortable with that, Clem? 8, as currently being displayed?
I guess, these little proposals, such a complex world, and I just worry that we do this without without enough thought.
We've had the time they've given us. We got.
Well, I don't have a specific suggestion.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on. Looking at 9, including regulations, disclosure regulation, disclosure limitations selected by the patient should apply to a wide range of exchange, not just HL7 CDA, but also FHIR, V2, NCDP, PDP, and proprietary message type. So doesn't matter how it's being exchanged, it will be applied. Hans?
Well, I have the same concern for 9, is that you've got a hospital system that's built on feeding its medical record through a whole bunch of systems, but is this also going to be qualified by patient-facing?
No, this has to do with patient restrictions. And the point that I think Hans introduced here is that we need to make sure that those restrictions can be respected regardless of the transport standard that is used. Hans, your hand's up. This is yours.
Yeah. So one suggestion is to move 9 under 10 as E. Because it needs to be part of that. How do we approach it? It might need to be stepwise otherwise, but we have to be very conscious about the fact that data flows in all manners. And if we only, quote unquote, plug the hole for one, then that doesn't mean that the other ones stop flowing as well. So we just need to be aware of an approach that is deployable effectively, almost regardless of the method of exchange being used.
If you feel it tucks under the larger recommendation, I think that makes sense.
I think so, because the approach needs to be neutral as to which standard or non-standard is being used to exchange data. If it doesn't do that, it doesn't work.
Right, and that's what I understood to be the point of 9 in the first place.
Okay.
Looking at a lot. Clem?
I don't have anything.
Okay.
So 9 has now become E.
Looking at 11, and 10 we've already addressed. Looking at 10, recommend that ONC studies the applicability of proposed but never enacted FHIR standards or FHIR security label standards to enable proposed criteria, and I guess that becomes F.
Well, my comment on that, I think, is that most awful lot of clinical data is.
Let me drop you. Muted yourself.
I'm muted. Yeah, so much clinical data is text, is narrative.
Let me muted yourself again, unfortunately. Clem, you're still muted.
All right, I'm muted. So much of the clinical data is text, is narrative. And I think it's going to be really hard to do DSP-4 in the real world of what's in medical records.
But that's not to say we shouldn't try to use it in all the ways that it can be used.
Right, and 11 specifically is about studying the applicability, not requiring that it be adopted. Hans? Hans, I want to recognize you quickly.
The way that 10 is now organized, recognizing the main standards 1 through 4 and everything else below it, I believe that 11 has been covered. So I almost would suggest just to strike it, because all of that would have to be addressed, except maybe the last part of how TEFCA could be used or otherwise to further enhance it. But that's not really part of 10 and doesn't seem to be as applicable at this point.
And okay, you don't think it's needed to stand on its own?
I'm not sure. I'm curious about others. But if we look at security label IG, that's number 4 under 10. And it relates to DS4P, which is listed as number 1. And they all interact, they all need to work together. So that's why I'm not convinced anymore that 11 is adding anything.
Okay, yeah, I see your point.
I can support that pending on his comment.
Yeah, And the last part of the sentence might be dropped into 12 together with TEFCA.
I'll just briefly comment again to Clem's point to that. Again, in a maturity model, the security label IG does support natural language processing and labeling free text as well going forward. So it's not just labeling structured data. And we're short on time, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So we'll take the last sentence. It also includes FHIR or looking at applicability to TEFCA or DERSA and like, and move that into other language in 10 and remove 11 completely.
So I'm not tracking that comment closely enough to be able to pull the relevant items from 11 and 12 into 10. Hans, do you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. And what I would be looking at is that the second sentence of 11 that starts with it also includes,
right,
merge that with 12, and the first sentence of 11 drop it. That would be the restructuring that I would be looking at.
Okay, into 12.
You're actually...
You mean move it into 12, right?
The first sentence of 11 is already taken over by 10. The second sentence of 11 goes into 12.
Okay, so we can address that as 12, as part of our 12 discussion right now. Recommend ONC clarify technology support for exchange flow down information and then include the second sentence from 11. Does that work?
Yeah, I think that needs a little bit of doctoring there, but that those thoughts can go together.
Okay.
DEFCA.
Another question, comment?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just forgot to pull my hand. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, so 12 is moving below the line, but still needs some editing, correct?
Yeah, and I'd be happy to do that if you want me to, if I can sneak into that cell for a moment and copy.
I'll give it to you in just a moment here. Just trying to keep up with myself. Okay, so. All right. I'm there, Hans. We've now got 4, 10 with multiple components, 7, 8, and 12. Obviously they'll be renumbered, but you got 7 minutes, Ike, before public comment. Do you wanna work on revisiting any of those?
I think we're good with this row, I hope.
This is the last row. Do you want to, while Hans is in here, do you want to go back up to the top?
Yes, that's where I was going to suggest.
So back up to row 2.
Yep. So we've taken feedback from the task force work group and made some textual changes. Looking at recommending that ONC define transparency requirements for patient characteristics and attributes used in DSI development and training. Any challenges with that? Are we good? No comments? I think we're good.
Go ahead. Look
at recommending that ONC include as a certification criterion the successful production of warning messages to the user by DSI when there are certain criterion meant, like critical data input is missing, data provided to the DSI is outside the range or value set expected by the DSI, or the use of the particular DSI is contraindicated by data from the particular patient's health record in the EHR. And that's a combination of several earlier recommendations, but we were able to condense that. Clem, do you have any comments or questions, or were you just any questions or concerns? Looking at recommendation 3, ONC collaborate with the FDA and stakeholders to develop certification and DSI approval criterion requiring the participation of physicians, patients, and the identification of relevant data inputs and outputs to and from a DSA module and for inclusion in the particular DSI function. And that would be coordinated effort because ONC has got responsibility for the interoperability criterion, and FDA has oversight of actually reviewing or approving a DSI's content capability. Any questions?
The only clarification I would suggest is that that ONC require a description of how physicians and patients were incorporated, just so that it's like a real incorporation of input as opposed to somebody asking their mother and saying, I got input from a patient.
So including public documentation of how this was accomplished?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we can accommodate that.
Well, could I just...
Yes, Clem? Clem, you're muted. So are we good with three?
Good. Hans has been hard at work, I believe, down below. So let's pop back down there. You're out of the field, Hans?
No, I put it in K, not yet in J.
Okay. Well, I can move it from J to from K to J. I just can't move it from comments into here. So
okay. Yeah, it is. I copied it from the comments into.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So this is the new 12. So here's the old 12 and the new 12. Okay, so it reads, recommend that ONC clarify.
ONC staff, can we get to the right screen for people so we need to scroll down a little bit?
And row 7.
It's at the bottom of the scroll.
And it said this should particularly address elements of the fire trust contract profile with labeling capability statements for real-time verification that applies when sender receiver are bound under agreements such as the Health Exchange DIRSA or the QHIN technical framework and consistently applied to any exchanges under TEFCA. That's pretty clear.
Does that meet everybody's needs, Clem?
Yeah, Ozan, I think 4.
Okay, well, let's put 12 to bed before we cut the comments. We're about to go to public comments.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Hans, for that. And ONC, let's pull ourselves to public comments and then come back to Clem.
Okay, we're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause just for a moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. Okay, not seeing any hands raised at this point, so we can turn it back to our conversation.
So Clem, you were going to, you were in which row, Clem, the comment?
Row 4.
Up in row 4. Okay.
Yeah, you can pull it up again.
Let's take ourselves back up to row 4. And it's in which recommendation?
No, I thought that's not the same 4. But
I think it's row 2, recommendation 4.
Okay, row 2, recommendation 4.
Well, never mind. I think I've lost focus on it.
Okay, recommendation 4 combines a number of earlier recommendations because there are multiple needs for consistent consolidated DSI attribute information. It needs to be provided to HIT module developers so they can incorporate it properly into the EHR module, as well as subsequent sharing downstream. it's necessary to assess, to share with providers for understanding how to use DSI. It's necessary to share with patients and provider and patients outside the EHR environment so that they can understand what the DSI modules do. And it's necessary to develop a comprehensive listing of all DSI modules.
So I think that last sentence there as a first phase, that goes up at the beginning, I believe.
It could easily go either place.
And then I think all of the this information is essential for is kind of the rationale.
Well, it was a two phase. It was the idea was two phases. Recognizing there's interest in short term before standard committee, there's not a current standard. So at least initially, having information shared is critical. We don't want to necessarily delay sharing, at least for option for DSI information with HIT developers so that they can incorporate data or an interface to the DSI.
So how do you feel, Ike, about how it's crafted presently?
I think that's fine.
Any concerns?
Under four, sub one, it's just not the attribute information has to be consistent or shared. It's a coding system too. So in other words, if one is using ICD-11 and the content that you have is ICD-10, it's going to break.
Well, isn't that part of the attribute information?
Well, I think the attributes is the fields, but I may be wrong.
So you're saying attribute information, including the relevant coding system?
Correct.
I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay, got it. Anything else on four? We're good with that? Phil?
I had a comment on three.
Okay.
I'm wondering if physicians in there needs to be broadened to clinicians.
Mm-hmm. Always appreciate that friendly amendment. I think we are often focusing too much on physicians as a subset of clinicians.
And it probably should include researchers as well.
Well, could we also ask that they would test these? Because when we were developing rules for our medical record system, we thought we knew everything. You know, we were smart clinicians. But when we actually exercised them, they made stupid mistakes.
Looking at the release of the DSI under an FDA regulation, that's in FDA's scope, not ONC's.
Also, I think the testing kind of goes without saying here. I mean, we talk about the approval criteria. Obviously, that would include testing.
So are we good with three? Or are we good with four?
I'm going to just pick those up and move them down so that everything else can
right
fit in the screen for us to look at.
I'm hoping we can knock out the next three in 2 minutes. Well, hopefully we can. Recommend the ONC collaborate with FDA to help us a format similar to nutrition label or medicine information label for consistent sharing of high value attribute data with patients. It may not be the entirety of all attributes, but at least critical pieces for patient information. We good?
I think this is essential. Yeah.
Any dissension, any comments? Hearing none, I think five goes green. Looking at six, collaborate with FDA to provide a feedback mechanism for clinicians and patients to provide feedback to DSI developers and maintainers regarding issues with the DSI so they can incorporate that feedback and improve the utility of the DSI. Any feedback?
I think that's essential.
Makes sense.
Number seven.
I'd just like to emphasize that DSI is also not great. And it's often a burden to the physicians because the circumstances don't exactly fit.
Which I think is a lot of what's behind these recommendations, which is identifying that there are patients for whom these don't apply and the need to address that. Why don't you go on, Ike?
Yep. Looking at seven, limiting the interfacing of incorporation of large language models of AI DSI into certified IT until such time as we've got a greater understanding, until such time as the developer can articulate the data sources and how outputs are produced, and until models are better understood.
I worry somewhat that the word limit might be too strong here, just given the exponential evolution of large language models. I would just hate for these to be fully excluded or.
So maybe more right. Of an assure that it includes this.
Well, the condition
it has a qualifier. It says until the DSI developer can clearly articulate data sources and logic used to produce outputs.
Right. Phil, I agree with you. My initial reaction was the same without that clarification. If it were just an absolute ban or absolute limit, I would agree that's a challenge. I think the clarification is sufficient.
Let's see if we can do eight in our last 90 seconds.
Yep. Recommend that ONC clarify distinction between enables and interface. We've actually already spoken to this a bit. And it's just a recommendation that they clarify the difference, if any. Any feedback?
So similar to what we went through yesterday, Ike, as our work group lead, will work with ONC to turn these into items on the Word document or the text document, which we will then have a chance to review prior to our Friday meeting.
Thank you so much for your time and energy today. And we will forward information to you as soon as it becomes available. Stephen, can you confirm, are we going to try to send out a copy of the draft Word document, or are we going to review
it? My aspiration is that we will complete the Word document after tomorrow's Group 3 meeting and get it out to task force members for Thursday review prior to our Friday meeting.
I want to say thank you to Ike and to Stephen for all of the work you're putting into this. This is a lot of work. And I know you guys have day jobs and new babies and things like that. So thank you very much.
You're here.
All right. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Thank you.